Hey, Anna, it's an end of an era for satellites and satellite watchers. We have perhaps the last iridium flare has happened over our skies. Now, I know this is very sad. This is very hard for you to hear this.
I'm glad I'm sitting down.
Yes, because these iridium satellites, these are a fleet of satellites that were launched in the 90s, these old communication satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their gimmicks were that they had these highly reflective bodies that the sun would strike them, bounce off them, and then come down to you at Earth. And so what you would see is this light would just get brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter, and then fade and fade and fade and fade, like over the course of about 10 seconds.
That sounds terrifying.
It does.
In the daytime?
Some can be visible even in the daytime. They were that bright. You don't like it?
No. I mean, how many calls do people probably, like observatories like us, get? I saw something. How many calls have you gotten about iridium flares?
That's true, a lot. So, but they're very exciting to a group if you know when it's going to happen.
When it's coming, okay.
Because we have these apps and we have these websites that can tell us when all these satellites go overhead. And it's so cool to take a group outside.
Yeah.
And say, behold, look at the sky, and you'll see this thing brighten up. And like, brighten, and it'll brighten up just as you can point at it. And they're like, whoa. And then it like fades away, and it's such a cool, powerful moment that people notice this thing.
Yeah.
Did I sell it on? Tell it to you?
Yeah. When's the next one?
No, they're all gone. Sorry. That was the whole point of this whole thing, is that they are all gone. They've been falling to Earth one by one.
Oh my God.
They've become obsolete.
Safe.
Yes, it is. They've become obsolete, and so they've been deorbiting them one by one. And so the last one that I saw, well, it was about the November 16th. That was the last iridium flare that I saw from iridium satellite number 97.
Out of how many?
There were quite a few. I don't know if they had 70 some. This one was number 97, though, but
yeah.
They didn't have 97 on. It was kind of weird.
What aren't they telling us?
Exactly. Where are the rest of them?
That's right.
Well, they've all crashed into the
Earth.
We're
on to you, NASA.
So now we've got the next brightest ones would be the International Space Station, which is really cool to check out.
I do like the International Space Station.
It just doesn't quite have the thing as the flares.
Maybe we get some decals, some stickers, get something up there so it gets a little flashy as it goes by.
I mean, how hard would it be to bring up a disco ball or something?
Oh my God, I love a disco ball.
Something for us.
We got to write them about this.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll do that. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman. We are both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer, and I'm here to make sure he explains himself. In this episode, we learn more about a worldwide effort called Inclusive Astronomy from its director, Hannah Harris. So you got this big intro about iridium flares, and you're like, JK, LOL, there's no more.
Yeah, it's sad because that will definitely reduce the number of UFO calls that I get.
You should be excited then. Have you been counting down to this?
That's true. But they're so cool. They've been part of like my experience working at the observatory for the last 20 years is just showing like these satellites. And it's like,
I feel like you're getting sentimental.
Yeah,
now you've been there 20 years. It's like, oh, this is
I know. You
nice.
Look back at them. That's what you do. That's what you do.
That's nice.
So there is this is also the time of year that we get the common questions of other strange lights in the sky.
Uh-oh.
And
Christmas lights.
It is Christmas lights. It's Christmas season. And I don't know if this is surprising or not, but one of the most common questions that I get, especially in December, is what was the Star of Bethlehem?
Oh, yeah.
Because this is something that's in, you know, very big in Christian tradition. It's in all the manger scenes. This was a star that appeared. This is according to the Bible
right.
A star that appeared that led the wise men to find Jesus, the baby Jesus, in a manger.
They couldn't text them.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
they couldn't,
had to,
not back then.
Send a star or whatever.
They had to send a star.
That's
and
right.
So people do ask me, well, what was that star? Which is it's strange at first that they would ask me. I mean, first, you know, I wasn't there.
Isn't it just a story like a part of a lovely tale of Christmas?
Yeah, and that's the thing is there a reality to this? And I don't know what it is. It's a connection that folks that, you know, that if they're religious or not religious, it's some kind of connection. It's part of their upbringing that they remember this. And they say, oh, well, we'll ask the guy. We'll ask the astronomer about this.
Sure. Now,
at first, when I heard this, I was thinking, okay, well, how do I answer that? I don't know what this thing was.
Because you said you weren't there.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
You're like, you know.
Yeah. But what I found is that astronomers throughout history have been asked this question and tried to answer it too. So, mm-hmm. You know, we got Galileo, we got Kepler, we got folks in the Renaissance that were trying to figure this out and trying to explain it scientifically. And even more modern astronomers that you know work for and write for astronomy magazine, Sky and Telescope magazine, in the recent past have weighed in on it. So I decided.
Have they really?
Oh yeah, yeah. So they write articles about this in modern thing, trying to explain what it is.
It's so interesting to me. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So so I really dove into this because I got this question so much. I wanted to answer it as thoroughly as possible and scientifically as possible. So
of course.
The Bible passage is only one. And it's very short. And it doesn't really
describe... That mentions it?
Yes.
Okay.
It doesn't describe it in much detail, unfortunately. It says that it moved across the sky, or well, it appeared to the wise men in the east.
Right.
But does that mean it was in the eastern sky, or they were in the east and they moved to the west? Either way, it's hard to tell. But they followed the star, and the star moved across the sky and then stopped above where Jesus was.
Because it was meant to lead them...
Right, exactly.
...to the baby.
Yeah, so we needed to find... something that would match that. What kind of object would move across the sky and be significantly bright and be unique and be of importance that people would notice? Not just be like, oh, yeah, that's the moon. Everybody knows that. Oh, that's Venus. Yeah, we know
right.
that. It would have to be something unique. So what would be unique, bright, and move and then stop in the sky?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I'm asking you. There's...
I did not know there was going to be like a test.
Easy answer. Nothing.
I was going to say a star.
Nothing.
Okay, that's a ridiculous... Nothing. Okay, that's not fair.
So there's no natural object that does that. Planets don't do that. Stars don't do that. Comets don't do that.
Uh-huh.
Shooting stars don't do that. Supernovas don't do that. Nothing does that. So... there is only one scientific explanation of what the star Bethlehem
is. A scientific explanation.
This is
okay.
what I've
What's
come up with.
What's the scientific
With all of my years of study and research on this, uh-huh. there's only one possible reason. And the only thing it could have been was a UFO. That's it. You see? You're speechless. That is the only possible answer.
Okay.
Unidentified. Flying object.
Okay. I know what a UFO is. What did you really have to spell it out? I know what UFO means. Okay. So is that that's the big
yeah.
crescendo we've led
right,
to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, okay, thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Bye.
Yeah, yeah,
see ya.
Yeah.
That's it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no. So then I follow it up with so it doesn't match up to anything. There is no thing that could do. And so I'm
so
not saying...
So you're basically trying to disprove the story of the three
I'm not saying it's an alien. And I'm not saying that it didn't happen. I'm saying we have no way of telling what it is.
You are why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, it's true.
This is what it's a nice story. The three wise men, they see a star. It GPSs them right to Jesus.
Right.
It's like, where here you go. I'm going to shine. And you're like, nope, not possible. Can't you just leave it alone?
I even did a map quest of the possible route that this wise men took from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. And
you guys, I can't.
I can't.
You map quested the three wise men.
If you walked it, too. Not if you drove, but if you walked. And so they could have done it. Yeah.
How much free time do you have?
You don't know how many times I get this question.
I really don't. Can't you be like, it's a lot. I'm sorry. The idea of you map questing. First of all, MapQuest is 10 years old.
Well,
at this
I did
point.
Start back then. It's
Second
true.
Of all, that you're not driving, walking. Did you account for camels?
Yeah,
I'm just
yeah.
curious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Camel load and
oh
all that kind
gosh.
Of stuff. Yeah. So,
you've taken this too far,
so,
Dean.
Yeah, I know, it's true.
You have to stop.
So when I first answered it that way, I thought, because I answered to somebody's face. You
and
know,
what
like,
did they say?
And I thought,
I'm just
oh
curious.
My gosh, they're going to punch me or something like that. And they said, oh. And I was like, well, yeah, because you don't want it to be like a comet. Comets happen all the time. You know, asteroid, a planetary conjunction, a supernova. Those are all you want something that's one of a kind, never happened before, never happened again.
UFO.
That's what you want. You don't want something that happens every 10 years or every 100 years. You want one time. So this is a one time, never been repeated ever again. We don't even know what it is. It's a mystery because it should be a mystery. And isn't that cool? And the guy was like, all right, I like that. All right. He had his fist cocked, and he's like, nah.
And then he went to a fist bump.
And then he did a fist bump.
He's like, you know what?
So
I like that.
And, you know, I'm.
Did you show him your MapQuest?
Yeah, I showed him MapQuest. So I was like, yeah, they could have walked it, but, you know, they needed something to. Yeah. And so I that's my answer is it's not a anti-religious answer.
It's just a scientific answer.
It's saying, you know, this is, we can't explain it, and that's okay. It shouldn't be explainable. So the one that gets me the worst, though, I have to give some shade to somebody.
Okay.
There's some astronomers that say, oh yeah, it was just Venus and Jupiter came together in a conjunction.
Oh, okay.
That is like the most offensive answer that you could give me as an observational astronomer, because, you know, Venus and Jupiter come together every couple of years, but they say, well, what if they were so close together they look like one giant star?
And it was bright enough.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So that's the explanation that Kepler made once, and that's the explanation that some modern folks at certain magazines I won't mention say. And is the most ridiculous thing, because when you watch Jupiter and Venus come together, the ancients weren't stupid. They were like, hey, look, there's Jupiter and Venus.
Oh, really? They would know what it was.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, it's Jupiter and Venus. Oh, hey, look, Jupiter and Venus are getting closer together. And then the next night, oh, yeah, they're closer together. And then the next night, they're all closer. And then the next night, what in the heck is that thing?
Jupiter. It's the star of Bethlehem.
Oh, my gosh. And then the next night, hey, there's Jupiter and Venus again. They're a little farther apart than
they were. That's interesting.
I know. So
that's ridiculous.
Oh, it is. That one's
that's a mockery.
There is no explanation, and so, yeah. So that's the only thing I can come up with. UFO. I mean, no disrespect at all. In fact, I even mean more respect that way.
You know, it's funny, when we were talking about this, I said, "What else should we chat about?" And you're like, "No, this will take the whole time." And I was like, "No way." You're absolutely right. This took the. Wow, this really was a lot to process.
I've been studying this.
The people at MapQuest.
Are so that's how long I've been studying this.
They're using us again.
Yes, we're back, baby. During the course of this year, the International Astronomical Union celebrated its 100th anniversary with a project to promote and support diversity and inclusivity in the astronomy community. We're super interested in hearing how this project went. So joining us is the project's director, Hannah Harris. Thanks so much for joining us, Hannah.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Well, so yeah, we want to hear all about this project, but how did you get started in this field?
Yes. So I am a recent graduate of Wellesley College, class of 2016, and I was an astrophysics major and Russian minor. And when I was a junior, I participated in the Leiden University and European Space Agency's summer astrophysics program, which was pretty unique because it actually had a science outreach project. So that was my first time actually doing science outreach, and I got to meet the team at Leiden Observatory in the Science and Society group. And that exposed me to the work that the IAU is doing. So after I graduated Wellesley, I came back to do more work with the IAU. So I'm very happy to be working on this project.
Yeah, so describe kind of like the elements of the Inclusive Astronomy Project.
Right. So this year, 2019, marks the 100th anniversary of the IAU, International Astronomical Union. And in celebration, the IAU has put on a wide suite of events throughout the world to celebrate astronomy outreach. And as part of that, they have the Inclusive Astronomy Project, which is focusing specifically on equity, diversity, and inclusion in astronomy. So everything from encouraging girls and boys to study science from a young age to supporting underrepresented minorities in science throughout their careers. And so as part of that, we have organized the Women and Girls events, as well as the Inspiring Stars exhibition, which is very cool. And the IAU also held their very first conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion in astronomy recently in Tokyo. So those are all the things that have been going on under the umbrella of Inclusive Astronomy.
So it sounds like this is something that's kind of ongoing, that is a focus of the IAU to be more inclusive in astronomy and opening up the community. How are you measuring success, you know, kind of as this project goes on?
Right, that's a great question. So for the Women and Girls Project specifically, what we wanted to do was start in 2019, but with the hope that the momentum built this year would carry on in future years, and that it would be a great opportunity to learn more about what kinds of issues and needs there are in different communities throughout the world. Because when we talk about something like supporting women and girls in science, it looks very different in every community, even if we share a common goal. So learning how to effectively localize the work in different communities is very important. And so for the Women and Girls Project, we had so far, and the numbers are increasing, over 250 events in over 60 countries. And each of these events have given us some feedback on what types of work they were doing, whether they were working with girls or mixed gender audiences or doing work specifically with visually impaired or deaf communities. And so we've learned what's worked for them. And it's been really fascinating and inspiring to hear what different groups have been doing. And we held a contest to recognize some of the best projects that were put on. And if you'd like, I can tell you a little bit about some of the projects, because I think they're really incredible.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, what's just an event like?
Yeah, so the event that won our contest is the Astro Molo Mhlaba project out of Cape Town, South Africa. And the Molo Mhlaba school is a STEM-focused private school for girls that reaches specifically underrepresented girls in South Africa. And they recently held an event with 100 girls and 13 women astronomers. And they even had the NASA astronaut, Dr. Ellen Baker, come and speak to the girls. And these are all primary school age. And so we thought they did a really excellent project. And the two others that I thought really stood out is that we had a science communicator in Bulgaria who went into a school for middle school girls with special behavioral and educational needs. And the school is actually under high surveillance with police presence all of the time. And he has been going in for the past 4 years and doing astronomy outreach with the girls. And it's something they look forward to every year. So some of the projects that we've seen are people who are really working to get at the most underserved and vulnerable communities. And so it's been incredibly inspiring.
That's great. That definitely sounds like an inspiring thing to be a part of. So this is just the beginning then, and this is going to be carried on? Is this something that's going to be a focus for the IAU moving forward then, it sounds like?
Yes, this is a big focus for the IAU moving forward. And we want to continue supporting science communicators and scientists who are doing this outreach work beyond 2019. So this year was kind of a great opportunity to really bring the community together and learn what needs the community has so that the IAU can support them and help make sure that their outreach is successful and effective.
Well, and the I got to point out the IAU is on Anna's list because of what they did to Pluto. I happen to be in great favor of their decision, but
eye roll.
There's one thing about the IAU that, you know, that does have a reputation of being kind of a little bit, ivory tower astronomers. This is so cool that they're doing this project. You know, so I guess I wanted to know, you know, what's the IAU like behind doors, mostly because they don't invite me.
you're sucking up with this whole Pluto talk. I think it was a great idea.
Well done. Well done, IAU. A standing slow clap.
That's right. Gosh.
But what really happens there?
Oh, man.
No, I mean, I agree with you because I do not have a PhD in astronomy yet, at least. So I cannot vote. I can't be a member of the IAU despite working for them.
What?
So
wait. So you work for them, but you can't vote in the things?
That's right, because IAU membership requires that you are a PhD holding astronomer.
Oh, come on.
Oh, well, that's my first strike.
But I think there are people in the IAU who want this to change, and they recently started the Office for Young Astronomers, which is supposed to support students at earlier stages in their careers. And there's also a large group of us who want to see people who are doing research adjacent to astronomy. So those of us in outreach, for example, or in astronomy for development, we want to see those people being brought into the community more, which is happening. But no, your concerns are on point.
Hey, all right. Well, I got two strikes. No PhD, and I'm not young. So not, no. I got two strikes against
sorry.
Me.
Hannah sounds like she's on her way.
I think it's just incredible what you're doing with these projects.
Very cool.
And keep those old whippersnappers in line. You know,
that's right.
show them the new ways.
Exactly.
Well, thanks so much for talking to us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
All right, so now we're going to play a little game I just dubbed Rapid Fire Fact or Fiction.
Excellent. I'm ready.
You don't look ready.
No, I'm scared a little bit.
I'm trying to throw you off your
game. Rapid Fire Fact or Fiction.
So I've got some space myths, or are they? And we're going to see what Dean can tell us as we play a little game.
Rapid
there is no prize except bragging rights.
Okay.
That's it.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What would happen if the sun exploded, and would it take us 8 minutes to find out?
Ooh, yeah. Explosion questions are always popular.
Oh, yeah. These are all explosion questions.
Good.
Just kidding.
If the sun exploded, we'd be in big trouble. It would be lights out. It'd be over.
Literally.
Everything would be destroyed. The earth. And would it take us 8 minutes to find out? That is a fact also.
Oh.
Because what happens is light takes 8 minutes to go from the sun to you. So this is one of the grand illusions. When you actually see the sun in the sky, that's not the sun. That's where the sun was.
Eight minutes ago.
Whoa, yeah. Isn't that cool?
God.
So if the sun explodes, we won't know for 8 minutes, but we won't know if it exploded. So we only know when it obliterates us.
We'll know for sure.
Then we'll know.
Yeah. Once all life is wiped out.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep.
We're wiped out.
Yep.
Is it possible that the star Betelgeuse has already exploded?
Yeah, that's another common question, and it is possible, though unlikely.
Yeah, what are the consequences for us? Put it in terms of me.
Yeah, so Betelgeuse is, last I heard, Betelgeuse is about 640 light years away from us.
Okay.
And so that means the light we see takes 640 years to get to us. So we see Betelgeuse as it was 640 years ago.
Right.
So could it have exploded in that time frame? And it's definitely possible.
But you're still seeing it.
Yes, we're still seeing it. So Betelgeuse is a red supergiant star at the end of its life. It could explode and go supernova any day.
Oh my gosh.
But we won't know until it gets here. So it could have exploded in the last 640 years, and the explosion is on its way.
It's just slow to reach us.
Yes. So I'm hoping that we see it. But the lifetime of a star is millions of years. So 640 is not a lot.
Next time my Wi-Fi is lagging, I'm going to be like, you know, at least I'm not waiting 640 years to get this info.
That's right. I'm waiting. I want it to go. I want it to blow.
You really?
So yeah.
You're hoping it goes supernova.
I want to see it.
Would it be called Supernova Betelgeuse?
Super Betelgeuse.
Super Betelgeuse.
Beetle Super
Betelgeuseier.
Betelgeuseier. That's good. I like that.
All right. Next question. Is the moon inching farther away from us every year?
True. That is true. The moon is getting slightly farther away from us, just about 1 inch per year farther away. So it is moving away from us.
I don't miss it.
No?
I can't tell.
No, yeah.
No,
an inch is nothing. So you can't tell anything with that. But if we go in the distant future, then the moon will be a lot smaller to our sky. But it would take you about a couple hundred thousand years to notice anything. So
we're fine.
Yeah.
We're going to get you to 2119
is what I got to get to. So, yeah.
That's not hurting. Conversely, could the moon someday just crash right into Earth?
Yeah, I get that question a decent amount of times.
Is it bigger than we are?
So, yeah, we get the moon is smaller than us by quite a bit. I mean, it's about a, what's the mass? It's 1/81st the mass of the Earth. So
it's a little guy.
It's pretty little. But in addition to what happens if the sun explodes, the next common question is, what if the moon hits us?
Right.
And so, yeah, it won't. But
doomsdayers out there. Like, nobody's asking, like, okay.
It was like, I was at a talking to seventh graders, and I was like, any questions? And it was like, what happens if the sun dies? What happens if Betelgeuse explodes? And what if the moon crashes into the earth? It's like, you guys have any positive questions?
They're like, nope.
I thought the children are our future.
And the future's looking bleak.
That's right. They really want to know about
it. At least in terms of the earth and the moon and the sun.
Yeah. But if I can keep them interested, I guess that's, yeah.
Yeah.
So, the moon wouldn't hit us. But if it did, it would be devastating. Oh. I mean, the moon is gigantic compared to any of the other meteorites that have fallen to Earth. Like, we see craters on the Earth from old meteors that hit us. And, you know, some of the craters are, you know, dozens of miles wide. Some of them are 100 miles wide. If the moon hit us, the moon's 2,160 miles across.
Uh-huh.
It would leave a big dent. I mean, it would destroy the Earth unless it gently came to a rest. You know, just like a little stone
like
next to us.
Nudge.
Yeah, it could be right next to us. But
hey, Earth.
Yep. But let's just keep it where it is. And if it wants to inch farther away from us, that's fine by me too.
Yeah, that's good. Way to play it cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good job answering those questions that you had no idea about beforehand.
No, not at all.
Excellent job. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to Hannah Harris from Inclusive Astronomy for joining us. You can find a link to her project on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
And thank you for listening. We'd love to get your ideas for guests or topics or any questions you or your kids may have about space, astronomy, and science. You can drop us a note on Facebook or Twitter or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
The archives of all past episodes of Looking Up are easy to find. Check out interviews with Beekman from Beekman's World, Amber Strawn from the Webb Telescope, former NASA head Charlie Bolden, astronaut Scott Kelly, pop culture icon William Shatner, and many more at wvxu.org/lookingup.
You can also subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. It really helps, and we really appreciate it.
Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer. Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.